Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Jake and Stacy is presented exclusively by CarPros Kia Tacoma. Joining us now on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline, it's Fox Sports' Bruce Feldman. Hey, Bruce, how's it going?
It's going great. Good to be on with you guys this morning.
We're really excited to have you on because there is plenty of news, not just in college football, but with the Pac-12. So I'm actually going to start on the south end with obviously USC being the biggest story. I mean, why now? And then also, what's the latest with where you think the head coaching search could go?
Well, look, people look at it and go, wow, it's not barely mid-September and they've already made a coaching change. But the reality is, Clay Helton has been on the hot seat really since 2018, and on Saturday night, his home game, they got embarrassed by a Stanford team that had looked awful the week before against K-State, and fans were flocking out of the stadium, you know, in the second half. I think from what I heard, Mike Bone, the AD, was borderline disgusted by what he saw on the field. I think he felt, you know, a lot of pushback from the fans were like, what are you waiting for? You know, this guy is not going to be the answer here. And so ultimately, I think he sorted out in his head, okay, what are we going to do? Is the timing right now? Do we feel comfortable with the interim choice that as we're kind of sorting it out? And it was, do we wait to see 2 weeks from now when they play Oregon State? If anybody shows up, or do we just do it now? And they felt like they had to do it now, and they ripped the Band-Aid off. In terms of the search process, it's going to be interesting because obviously it's a big job. They have to pay Clay Helton about $10 million. They're going to have probably some buyout on the next side of how they're going to have to get some of the top candidates who I think may have some interest. Now, look, James Franklin, I think, makes a lot of sense for them. I could see him fitting in Southern California and kind of flourishing in a big stage. There's a lot of other guys who are successful coaches who look like they're ready to take a big step up, whether it's Luke Fickell at Cincinnati, who, by the way, was hired by Mike Bone, who's the AD at USC now, or a Matt Campbell, who's done a really terrific job at Iowa State. Both guys are Ohio guys. I think for a lot of people who look at and know Luke Fickell's situation, I think there's a little skepticism about Luke Fickell, who has, by the way, six kids, whether he would want to leave the Midwest and raise his family in Southern California. Matt Campbell, I think, is maybe a little more of a likelier scenario of the two, even though he doesn't have the connection to Mike Bone. I think there's some concern from some USC people about, well, he's never recruited a bunch of 4- and 5-star guys. Can he do that? Because that's what it takes here. And I think that is something that if he's going to be the guy, I think they have to wrap their heads around and figure that piece out. And then the other one to me is an obvious candidate is Mario Cristobal at Oregon. Obviously, he had this huge win over the weekend, smashing Ohio State on the road. He's recruited in Southern California especially well. And he's brought a physical style of football, something that I know a lot of USC people find really attractive because they're kind of over the air raid that they have there now. So on that sense, he's got a good job, but is that a call you make, if you have to make, if you're the AD at USC, just to see if there's a chance if he'd be interested?
Bruce, I'm going to bring up two names. One that locally people will be very interested in, and two is a national name that we all know. What about Chris Peterson and the potential of Urban Meyer being interested in this job after a season in Jacksonville?
I don't think Chris Peterson wants to jump back into the middle of college football and the craziness that it is. You know, like I did a long story with him in the off season, kind of talking about priorities and kind of life balance. And now, full disclosure, I work with him now. Like, I'm with him on Saturday afternoons at Fox. I could be wrong. I don't think Chris Peterson has an interest in jumping back into it, or certainly, you know, moving to Southern California and going 100 miles an hour in recruiting and doing the things that I think USC feels like it needs. I could be totally wrong. I don't think that's like when I've seen people mention his name, and I get why you're asking about him, but when I see, you know, writers saying, you know, like he should be the guy, like, yeah, that would be great for USC. I just don't think Chris Peterson's going to want to do it. The Urban Meyer one, like, man, like a couple of years ago when the fan base was clamoring for him, you got to remember USC was coming. It was the new president of the school, Carol Folt, took over a program that a university that had all sorts of scandals. And I'm not just talking about like football or athletic wise. I'm talking about a lot of stuff in the university. What I was told is she did not want anything to do with Urban Meyer as a football coach. Didn't think I can hire him, you know, because yes, he's won national titles, but he also has a lot of baggage, like all that stuff from the Zach Smith scandal where he got suspended for Urban Meyer got suspended for 3 games. I don't think she wanted any part of that. Even if he was on the sidelines, I don't know if they would go that route now, a couple of years removed from some of those other PR issues. And then beyond that, like obviously he's in Jacksonville now. I have no idea if he's, you know, it wouldn't shock me if he was not in Jackson. You know, if he said, yeah, I'm going to be one and done, that wouldn't surprise me. I mean, he's like a wildly unpredictable coach to, you know, like you remember that deal with Florida where
right.
He retired and then unretired in a day. You know, he's just a hard guy. Like, I think he thinks one thing, for 15 minutes, he's 100 miles an hour at it. And then also his mind could change the next day. So I have no idea. I'm thinking about it. It's just like, he didn't want to be the head coach of Texas a year ago. He could have been, you know, Chris Del Conte, the AD, made a run at him. They talked a lot. He didn't want to do it. I honestly think it turned off by NIL and some of the things that were coming down the pipeline. I'm not sure how much of that would have changed after he got a taste of the NFL. I mean, it's an interesting situation. If he starts out 0-9 or 1-9, which is obviously possible when you're getting blown out by the Houston Texans, who knows what his mindset's going to be like.
Yeah, it's one of the weirdest things. I obviously had plenty to ask about the Pac-12, but with Urban Meyer, I mean, I feel like the narrative you keep hearing, and who knows if it's true, is just that the adjustment to the NFL has been kind of a shock to the system with how he'd normally want to run a program.
Yeah, I guess I'm not surprised, because, and obviously, Jake, you know this world better than me of having lived in it. I just think that a lot of times football coaches only know what they know, meaning what they live in. He's a guy who deals with in such absolutes. And I think for some of them, they only know this, like he only knows his own level of success and he only knows his own power dynamic he's really had.
Right.
And then you go to the NFL. I mean, you know, it's like, it's an entirely different business model. It's an entirely different power structure where all of a sudden now, you're not the only one. Like, when was the last time in the regular season Urban Meyer coached in a game where he had less talent than anybody or even equal talent? I mean, when you're at Ohio State, when you're at Florida, and Florida for most of it, Nick Saban didn't have it rolling in Alabama.
Right.
So he always had more talent than everybody. That's probably not going to be the case in the NFL. And it's probably going to be, even if it's at the same level, I just think now all of a sudden you're coaching grown men. And so I could definitely see, you know, him especially being rattled by culture shock because it's so different. It's so new to him.
Yeah, that is the transition in the waters that he is trying to navigate right now. And Bruce, we've got plenty of drama. We've got plenty of conversation happening right here in the Northwest within the Pac-12. The University of Washington really struggling coming out of the gate. How much of a surprise is that to you?
I was not surprised they lost to Michigan. I obviously was surprised that they lost to Montana. I think it's like, okay, how quickly can the receiving core get healthy and get back assembled? I think there were some positives. I know it may not look it like that. I mean, you know, in the passing game, some things popped up that are good. I think they're going to be fine on defense because, you know, that's Jimmy like strength. I didn't look at this team coming in as a top 15 team. I just didn't think they were there offensively. I think they're an 8-4, 7-5 kind of team right now. And we'll see if they can get to 8-4 and kind of build off that.
the idea of just kind of pounding the rock and trying not to make mistakes on offense and then leaning on your defense, is there any prominent program that comes to mind that's done that successfully for a couple years?
I mean, there's a bunch. I mean, look, that's what Jim Harbaugh is trying to do right now.
Right.
I mean, really. And I think you look at, it's been a while, but obviously Wisconsin has made its whole identity on that. I don't think that will be what Wisconsin won't be what Washington wants to make its identity solely that, just because you have access to better kind of athletes, I think. And so I would anticipate that it'll open up more and you have a young quarterback who's still getting settled in, but I think you obviously have a terrific tight end and you have some young receivers. I think the question is how quickly can they develop, because right now they were so depleted against Montana. Going forward, I'm interested to see what they can do. Obviously, there was a lot of questions and skepticism when Jimmy Lake hired John Donovan to be his offensive coordinator from the college folks who remembered it at Penn State. We'll see. Jimmy Lake obviously knows a ton of football, especially, pass game-wise, being, that he had to defend it. So I'm interested to see what he sees and what they see as a vision going forward. We know that there's a five-star quarterback waiting in the wings. We know that they have some good skill guys. I've heard really good things about some of the young backs and receivers. So you got to hope, if you're a Husky fan, that this is going to get, you're going to see a lot of improvement during the season as guys heal up.
Bruce, what do you make of the Nick Rolovich situation? I mean, when they made the hire, I felt like this was a tremendous fit, moving on post Mike Leach and what he would bring to the table and the success that he had at Nevada and Hawaii. But I mean, there's just been so much off the field issues, especially regarding, vaccination status when it comes to the state of Washington and the state having to mandate it and him being very, vague about where he stands on that issue. What have you made of that situation going on in Pullman?
Yeah, I'm like you. I thought it was a terrific hire when they made it. I think Rolovich has a really, really good eye for talent. And just from knowing he was first on a lot of evaluations that proved very smart. And I think he's a really good offensive coach. This, has been quite a turn, really, I don't want to say at the beginning of the pandemic, but really, especially this part, how it's been handled by him. It's been cryptic. It's been really kind of bizarre. I think I like Rolovich personally from as much as I know him, but I think honestly, the way the position I think he has gotten into with his bosses, not just the AD, but also the lead, the president of the school, I don't know how you put the toothpaste back in this tube. Obviously they didn't have much success last year on the field. I get, because it's the first year of a new system and it happened in a pandemic and there's all sorts of issues with that. But I don't know if he is going to be able to do enough on the field for them to be able to overlook this now, because it's such a messy situation where it's the only thing people are going to know about nationally about Washington State football right now is the drama with the head coach and what is going on there. And that's what he's getting asked about. They're going to get USC this weekend. Like, you beat USC, it's like, yeah, so what? USC got blown off the field by Stanford last weekend and they fired the head coach. So I'm not sure in the short term exactly. Yeah, he can go, Washington State can win all their games, but they already, they got off of the season, as a kind of a shaky performance where they lose to a team that I think a lot of people wouldn't have expected, a Pac-12 team to lose to. I just don't know how he can overcome it, because to me, it's like too deep of a hole on too hot button of an issue. Especially for a coach who I don't think has, had a chance to win enough to build up people to go, yeah, he's the right guy anyway. We can overlook, fans and boosters will overlook a lot of stuff if they think they have a head coach who can win a lot of games. Right or wrong, that's kind of how that world lives. And if you have a coach you're not even sure if he can win, because of the track record so far. I don't know. I would not at all be surprised if they were looking for a new head coach, you know, at some point this winter.
It's a wild situation. He is Bruce Feldman, a reporter for Fox Sports. Also, you guys, if you're tracking the USC search, which of course you are, big Pac-12 news, Bruce has an article in The Athletic, and you can regularly read his coverage there. Thanks so much, Bruce.
My pleasure. Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
All right, it's time to announce this show's Seahawks code word. So here's how it works. Head to 710sports.com/win. 710sports.com/win and enter the code word return by the end of our show to be entered to win two tickets to see the Seahawks host the Titans in their home opener. Again, 710sports.com/win. Enter that code word return. Remember, this code word expires at the end of our show and you'll have another chance to win with Wyman and Bob. Details and rules at 710sports.com/win. Let's get to four down territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru, Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
First down, Jake, you've had 2 days to watch the tape now, so what stands out to you about Russell Wilson's performance on Sunday?
Well, what stands out to me is multiple aspects. One, the fact that he was in such command of this offense does not surprise me. Saw the work that he did in the offseason up close and personal. I knew that this is how he would show up. But what stood out to me was the fact that he was so clean and efficient with his decision-making. Downfield, opportunities, looking downfield. Nope, moving on, getting the ball out of my hand, distributing to the checkdown, getting things going, getting that positive completion. Moving on to the next down, next phase, getting the ball distributed into your playmaker's hands, and eventually that leads to big plays. And I think that's the one thing that stood out to me with Russell Wilson. And overall, that's going to be the thing that he needs to be able to continue to keep doing in order to truly combat the response the defenses will have or the desire defensive coordinators will have to try to limit the big play. Well, you need to be able to show that you can slice and dice and be willing to take those checkdowns, be willing to hit the short to intermediate stuff, and be able to consistently move the chains that way. That will provide more opportunities downfield to do what we all know that he does better than anybody, which is take those deep shots downfield and perfectly place them into his receivers' hands, Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf, and the rest of the crew. So that's overall what stood out to me. But get this stat. With Russell Wilson, there's a couple of them. All right, on Sunday, it was Russell Wilson's 11th career game with 4 touchdown passes and 0 interceptions. The most such games by a player in his first 10 seasons in NFL history, surpassing Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers and Peyton Manning, who all had 10, okay? The other one is, in his first 9 seasons, most touchdown passes in the first 9 seasons, Peyton Manning, Dan Marino, Russell Wilson. Those are the top three. Right now, after Sunday's performance, Russell Wilson passed Dan Marino. He is going to pass Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning had 275 touchdown passes. At this point where Russell Wilson's career is currently at, Russell has 267. So you just look at it, and Russ is off to a hot start in his career, no doubt about it, in terms of not only being a truly elite quarterback now, but is an elite quarterback amongst all the greats and will be a future Hall of Famer.
Second down. Did you see any rust from Dwayne Brown week one after missing all of training camp?
Not at all. Dwayne Brown doesn't need training camp. It's like Walter Jones. You remember Walter Jones, how he would be staying away from the Seahawks facility, and then there would be those pictures of him like pushing SUVs as his workouts while he's staying away from
totally
the team.
Totally normal stuff.
Totally, totally normal. I mean, it's just like Dwayne Brown, totally normal for a 325-pound human being to be doing like 20-plus pull-ups and doing 4 sets of 20. Yeah, that's totally normal. Not. You look at Dwayne Brown, he's in amazing shape, and he showed it. His Pro Football Focus grade, 87.8 pass blocking grade, which is second amongst all tackles. And the Seahawks overall, their offensive line, had a pass run ESPN pass rush win rate of 53.1%, which ranked 10th best after week one. So Dwayne Brown, offensive line, got off to a good start.
Third down. All right, what element of the Shane Waldron offense are you thrilled to see used effectively?
Give me more of this. The Seahawks nearly doubled their use of play action in Sunday's game. They used play action 41.4% of the time, which was second most in the NFL. It's a staple of the Sean McVay system, staple of the Shanahan coaching tree. And the reason why that's so great is because, one, play action is something that Russell Wilson is good at. And when people think of play action, they think play action, deep down the field shots. No, that doesn't perfectly adequate what play action means. That means naked bootlegs. That means, you know, play action, get the ball out into the flat. There's a variety of different ways that you can look at play action. And they used it 41.4% of the time. That's going to be an advantage of this team while you have an effective ground game as well. You add that with Chris Carson, it's going to be a lot of fun.
Fourth down. Jake, what aspect of the Seahawks' defensive performance against the Colts went under the radar?
Well, everybody was focused on the sacks and the pass rush, and rightfully so. I mean, that was outstanding. But the other thing that was great is they got off to a really good start from their rush defense as well. They didn't keep the Colts under 100 yards due to Carson Wentz's scrambles, but they kept the Colts running backs in check. Jonathan Taylor is a very good running back in this league, had a great rookie year last year. He was kept to under... Both backs were kept under 4 yards per carry. Jonathan Taylor, 17 carries, had an average of 3.3 yards per carry. Outstanding job shutting down the run game by the Seattle Seahawks, and they are going to need that great run defense when it comes to facing the Tennessee Titans this next week when they got Derrick Henry coming into town. So hopefully that's something that stays true, because they were great at it last year. Be great to shut down that Tennessee Titans run game as well.
You know, I need to look it up, but I think Derrick Henry had a ridiculously low number of rushing yards in the first quarter against Arizona, like 8. Something just obscene. Rate, review, and subscribe to the Jake and Stacey podcast wherever you get your podcasts. If you are not a big podcast person, though, you can listen to the show on 710sports.com or watch live video at 710sports.com/video. Coming up in the timeline, Peyton Manning shared a story of Jim Harbaugh being his typical weird self in a group setting. That's next.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacey,
brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
Jake and Stacey is presented exclusively by CarPros Kia Tacoma. It is The Timeline, reading you the top stories you're going to see on your own timeline. And guys, it's no coincidence that a lot of these come from the same broadcast. It's Peyton and Eli Manning's Monday Night Football broadcast, and it was hilarious. So let's start with this one. Peyton Manning shared a story just about kind of Jim Harbaugh. We all know he's kind of weird, but it continues kind of just being his typical weird self in a group setting. Cut number 10. Take a listen.
Quick story, I watched film with the 49ers. I threw for the 49ers. We're down at Duke at the Cutcliffe House. Me, John Harbaugh's brother Jim, and Greg Roman were leaving. Mrs. Cutcliffe was like, would y'all like something to eat? She really didn't want us. She was just trying to be nice, right? I'm like, no thanks. Greg Roman's like, no thanks. Coach Cutcliffe's like, no thanks. Jim Harbaugh's like, yeah, I have a PB&J. I think a PB&J.
Of course, a little PB&J.
And she's like, I haven't made one of those since my kids were 8. I'm not sure. Yeah, but I mean, often I'll take a PB&J.
Everyone's done that thing of like, oh, can I get you anything? And you're just being polite because you have guests
Correct.
In your home. What you're not expecting is for them to be like, yeah, a sandwich would be, but especially not a PB&J. Yeah, some chicken nuggets. Like, can you imagine? Yes, PB&J. Can you get the crusts off, please, and cut it into little triangles? I like feeling like a giant when I eat it.
He's such a weirdo. He's such a weirdo, and it makes him a villain. But if you're able to be far away and removed from him, you can kind of almost appreciate the craziness of Jim Harbaugh.
He's a weird dude.
He is. He's just wired differently, and it's just odd. When you talk about his brother, John, John's a great guy. Like, he's a very likable guy, John Harbaugh is. So you just wonder, I think about my boys, how different they are. I don't think either one of them is going to turn into Jim Harbaugh. But it's just so funny how different your kids really can be from each other.
Now, if you have to pick Bodie or Jackson to be the one to request a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, it's going to be Bodie.
Maybe it would be Bodie. I don't know. I mean, Bodie's pretty intense.
All right. Russell Wilson also joined the broadcast, and he, Peyton, and Eli discussed Sierra's Seahawks-inspired dress she wore to the Met Gala in cut number 9.
She's rocking the jersey there.
I like it. Look at number three. Got the ball purse, looks like it. She's got a ring that I wanted. I didn't get it.
Well, you know, I have a ring that Tom has. I need to go get to it.
There you go. There you go.
I'll leave it. I stole a couple of those. So, you know, we're good. We're all even, I think.
That was Ciara wearing Russell's Super Bowl 48 ring. Obviously, Peyton Manning making a joke. Having been the opposing quarterback in that one, and then Russell Wilson making a joke about losing in the Super Bowl the subsequent year. Tom Brady getting that ring.
Proud of him. Proud of him for that one. It was
pretty
a good
off
one.
The cuff.
It was pretty. It was good. It was off the cuff. It was great. Now this cat. This whole situation with Peyton Manning. I had no idea. Do you guys know this was going on? That this was going to happen for the Monday night game.
I heard it getting hyped up. I only remembered that it was going on when I saw the videos online. Then I was like, oh, I'll check out what ESPN2 is.
I don't know where I was because I completely missed this. I would have totally watched. Stacey, did you know?
No, I mean, I knew that they were doing something, but I didn't realize it was happening until the third thing I'm about to get to was, let me just jump ahead and then we'll cycle back. I didn't know that this was happening until this video quickly became viral of a fire alarm going off in the middle of Peyton and Eli's broadcast.
Cover two, man. Eli, what'd you do? You set the alarm.
We have perfect. A fire perfect. Alarm.
Fire alarm.
While we're watching the game. Oh, my goodness.
Ray, you're the best, man. Thanks for joining us, man. It's been a lot of fun.
Man.
Thanks so much, Ray. I learned a lot.
That went off for a while.
It stinks because they literally just brought on Ray Lewis. I mean, one of the greatest linebackers of all time, you know, and one of really, you know, Peyton Manning's, you know, rivals during that span. I mean, the matchups, you would get so hyped to see Peyton Manning and Ray Lewis going back at it, making the calls against one another and all that. They eventually were able to get him back on and have some, you know, more conversations, share some stories or whatever. But, man, I mean, terrible timing. Terrible timing.
Well, speaking of, I'm not even going to say terrible timing because it still worked out for them. But Florida State right tackle Brady Scott, even after the Noles suffered the worst upset in school history against Jacksonville State, still after the game took that time to propose to his girlfriend on the field. And you know what? I'm fine with that.
When Are is you? There ever a convenient time to propose
there
to
is,
somebody?
I mean, look, it could have been shockingly worse than that, in that she could have said no.
Yeah, it could have been, but also, I think there's an opportunity to read the room there. I mean, like,
maybe you wanted
this is
to
the worst
the
possible
mood.
Thing that could happen to you, and you're proposing to your girlfriend on the field while Jackson State is literally celebrating on the field beating you. Like, to me, I'm happy for them. Good for you. I think this was a terrible decision. Like, even if you had this, you know, obviously well thought out and planned, back out of it. Do it the next game. Like, don't do it when you just got upset by Jackson State if you're this Florida State guy.
I don't know. She's excited. They're in love. They're happy. People behind them are cheering and taking videos and crying. Who cares? This feels like something, if anyone watches Ted Lasso, I feel like this would happen in Ted Lasso. Ted would be like, no, Jake, it's not always about winning and losing. These people are in love. Let them have this moment.
Sure. They could be in love after a game where they win.
You would be Jamie Tartt. You'd be like, no, it's about winning. I hate this.
No, I absolutely would not be feel. I would not feel like proposing to my girlfriend in that moment. Even it, like
they're so
if
happy.
If it was me proposing to Brooke and I had plans to do that, I would be waiting. Either I would find some other time during the week to do it, or I would wait the very next week. I am not doing that after a loss on the field. That's embarrassing.
That loss, by the way, came in the final six seconds.
It was a Hail Mary.
It was a Hail Mary. It's 59-yard touchdown to beat Florida State in the final 6 seconds.
I will say, though, the pictures of the proposal, it looks like it's done in front of a mostly empty stadium.
Yes, they waited.
Which,
it's not like
look,
it happened.
When you lose to Jacksonville State like that, when you're Florida State, people are going to be filing out of there very quickly. So, yeah, I mean, maybe he was aided by the fact that there was a loss in that game. And also, You probably flew in family, I guess, if you're going to do it in front of everybody at the stadium.
That's the thing. It's like, what if her grandparents are there and his grandparents are there and a bunch of
tomorrow's
grandparents
not guaranteed.
Are there. Yeah, exactly, Jake. You aren't guaranteed.
Kyle Shanahan taught us that.
If Kyle Shanahan taught us anything, none of us are guaranteed.
Sure.
That we could all die tomorrow in a meteor shower that hits the planet. We all die, and now we don't get to see next weekend.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to look at it from that perspective, sure.
Yeah, you could.
But
you could.
I would. Okay, so let's say you did fly in family. Let's say you have no other choice. I would be waiting as long as possible to tell every Jackson State player is off the field before I make that moment happen. I wouldn't be able to do it. I'm happy. Like I said, I'm happy for them, but losing like that, I wouldn't be able to do that. No way. I'd be too upset.
I guess you're not invited to their wedding. Well, that's, you clearly don't approve, and they seem very happy.
No, I'm happy of their union. I'm happy of them getting married. I just think that it was ill-timed.
All right. Speaking of being happy for people, I am very happy. Logan Gilbert had a fantastic start the other day, but there is some good and bad for Mariners pitching. Let's talk about how they can get right, especially when it comes to some members of their bullpen, which has otherwise been phenomenal. So hopefully some good stuff there. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
We are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. The Mariners and Tyler Anderson go for a series win against the Red Sox tonight. Pregame starts at 6 p.m. First pitch is at 7:10 p.m. right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. And that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. The Mariners, by the way, a big announcement Thursday at 1 p.m. I wonder what it could be.
No clue.
Wouldn't it be great if it was a bobblehead night? we all think it's going to be. Oh, the All-Star game. We're officially confirming.
I wonder if
it
has
to
do with the Jeff Passan report that came out about the All-Star game. I wonder if that has anything to do with it.
Now,
What All-Star game?
Why are they waiting 2 days? Just because of the Boston series?
Well, because I think Commissioner Manfred has to get to town.
Yeah, which is why the Mariners...
We have to wait for Manfred to get here.
Yes, which is why the Mariners can't say anything, because he's got to be able to
be
the one to do it.
Of course, yeah. He's got to come in and do his thing. I would rather him just do a telecast. Could we just have him do the telecast announcement of it? Does he physically have to be here?
Yes, and that he's going to come here. He's probably going to throw a fish or something. They're going to shoot a promo for it, maybe. I don't know.
I think that's the one downside of this whole thing is getting Rob Manfred here in this city.
They're going to unfurl the teal carpet.
Yeah, I don't have the same hate towards Manfred.
Really?
No, I think that Roger Goodell has disappointed me a lot more as a commissioner than has Rob Manfred. Rob Manfred, man,
the Astros stuff
was really good.
How has Goodell bothered you more than Rob Manfred?
I don't...
What is Goodell
Let me change that.
Continue a tremendous product. I know that he's been the heel in all this, but that guy's done his job to like the T.
I guess... What has Manfred done to really upset you outside of how he handled Houston?
How about the sticky situation?
But I'm not against that in theory. It's just it probably.
How about last year when
mid-season.
We were talking about whether or not baseball would even happen in 2020?
Okay,
they were trying to divvy up billions of dollars, whereas people are losing their jobs all over the country.
Thank you.
Okay. But that's a two-way street.
How about
this
upcoming off season when the CBA expires? What if we're sitting around in May and there's no baseball?
Which is kind of likely.
I mean, then I'll hate Manfred more.
Well,
I'm going to switch allegiances.
You say like the Houston situation is like, that's no big deal.
No, it's absolutely a big deal.
Thank you.
Wrong.
Yeah, he handled
but,
it
I mean,
so
Roger
unbelievably
Goodell has
poor.
Handled stuff horribly, also.
Again, what exactly?
The
though?
Entire I mean, Ray Rice situation was bungled.
Okay, agreed. I agree with that. Definitely,
Roger Goodell is incredibly inconsistent with suspensions and punishment for players.
Yeah, but that's the NFL in general. I mean, they've been wildly inconsistent with that stuff. I mean, I wish that they would figure that out, but I look at Manfred, and particularly with that Houston Astros situation, even the New England Patriots, right? You could say that the NFL was protecting the New England Patriots. Even the New England Patriots got punished to some degree. Even Tom Brady himself got suspended, right? Had a little bit of a punishment. The Houston Astros didn't get nothing. Zilp. Zilch.
Yeah, but wasn't that all part of like a plea bargain type of thing that they did to try to get information? It was either find out what happened.
You're telling me you can't find out at all? Like you have
I think
to...
that they needed participation from players and staff members of that organization to find all the details they needed. And it's really annoying. I'm more annoyed at Houston from the top down, including ownership from the top down.
Man.
Was it Crane? Jim Crane? Tom?
Jim Crane.
Jim Crane. From Jim Crane down, I am more annoyed with Houston, which I think is sketch and horrible and handled it so shadily, which isn't a word, than I am with Manfred. Manfred just didn't have a backbone with it.
Yeah, I guess the whole Houston Astros thing has just completely turned me off, and also that it's with a division rival, so that also ignites the flame a little bit more. But I just very seldomly see the decisions of Rob Manfred and Major League Baseball as a whole actually making the game better, actually making it a prominent sport like the NFL has continued to keep progressing forward.
I think the elimination of the use of foreign substances can make the game better. The problem is the way that they started it should not have been midseason. And also trying to make an example of Hector Santiago was pretty lame.
Yes, it was horribly lame.
But overall, I actually think that that's something that can help the game. Strikeouts were way up. Like, pitching was dominating even the best hitters in the game.
Yeah.
You were seeing slow offensive production. Like, it needed to happen. I'm completely fine with that rule change.
Yeah.
Or rather, with the focus on the rule.
It did need to happen. You're right. I mean, it has led itself to, and that change has brought things down, and it has ultimately made the game more fair, and it's made it easier for batters even by a little bit. But I think the optics of it obviously were pretty poor. So that when you're talking about Major League Baseball, Rob Manfred, he's not my favorite guy.
I like that we were going to have a conversation about Logan Gilbert and Paul Sewald, and instead we were like, who do we hate more, Rob Manfred or Roger Goodell? I mean, man, they've both done some pretty
We got sidetracked,
things.
I would say.
I know. Let me end with Logan Gilbert because I want to make sure that I just talk about how fantastic he was, matching a career high 9 strikeouts. Here he is in cut 7 talking about how happy he was they sent him back out after the 6th.
Yeah, absolutely. I was really happy that they trusted me just to go back out there, and also after the leadoff double to stay in there. I think that just showed the trust, and I wanted to finish the outing on a good note and keep us in the game at a 2-2 tie, so I was really happy they let me go back out.
Excuse me, for the 6. He pitched through 6, not after. A fantastic outing from him. By the way, you guys, Tyler Anderson on the mound tonight. Marco Gonzalez tomorrow for a matinee to close out the series. Really, the only issue has been, and it's hard to say issue because he's been so phenomenal, is Paul Sewald. And Curtis, you're not worried about it. Jake, you're not worried about it.
I'm personally not worried about it because, I mean, I think Paul Sewald is still unbelievable. He's got unbelievable stuff. But the one thing that is concerning is that you've seen, and to his credit, it's against the best hitters in baseball. Like, he's not struggling with, you know, the above average, the middle guys, the below average guys. It's the very best. Alex Bregman, you know, Xander Bogaerts. I mean, you just look at these guys and the power hitters in baseball. They have not chased the slider, and they have sat back and instead said, no, we're going to force you to pitch this fastball at us, and we're not going to chase the slider. And so that, to me, has really been the difference with Paul Sewald, and he's got to find a way to combat that, the way to work around that. But outside of that particular issue that's popped up in some untimely home runs, He's been great, but you need him to be able to figure that out here at the end of the season, here during the series, and so that you know that Paul Sewald isn't going to get quote-unquote figured out heading into next year.
All right. Don't forget, Scott Service is going to join us in about an hour for the Scott Service Show at 1 p.m. Plenty to get to with him. Before we do that, though, we've got to take a look around the NFL. That's coming up later this hour. We've also got to talk about what makes this Seahawks start to the season different than last year's. We'll talk about the good, the bad, all of it, getting you guys ready. It's a little too early to look ahead to week 2, but I think you have plenty of things to be excited about from this game. That's next.